Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by A Wrestling Historian. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram for your latest dose of pro wrestling history. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram today. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the latest podcast. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, as always, the former WCW and WWF head writer, of course, former WCW World Heavyweight Champion, Vince Russo. Vince, welcome in. How you doing?
What is going on, John? How's everything going, my friend?
Very good. Very good. Are you happy with the build-up to WrestleMania so far?
I could care less when I autograph. And I have no interest in it. I won't be watching it. I don't care. I stopped caring a long, long, long time ago, John.
What about The Rock? No interest?
No. Nah.
Does it matter that he's on night one and not night two? Does that matter at all?
I'm sure he'll be on night two in some way, shape, or form. I'm sure he'll make an appearance. I mean, I think it would be silly for him not to.
I actually do have tickets for night two, but this was because me and my buddy thought Rock was wrestling on night two. So now we're actually looking to sell those tickets. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So you took a big gamble, bro.
Yes.
Wow. 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 Yes. What, if you don't mind me asking, what'd you pay for those tickets?
I think they were $250 a piece, something
John,
like that.
They were expensive. What are you nuts, bro?
Like, they're actually, shockingly, they're actually worth double.
Oh my God.
They're actually worth about $500 a piece.
That is insane. I think the most money I ever spent for any ticket ever. I am a big Rihanna fan, and I took my daughter.
Really?
I took my daughter to see Rihanna a couple of years ago, and I think the tickets were $120. That's the most I've ever paid. Oh my God, bro!
Ticket prices these days are nuts. They went through the roof. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But we thought too, if he's wrestling, that's cool. You know, we've been fans forever. It'd be cool. Now he's not wrestling, looking to sell. It looked to be worth about $500 a piece. So hopefully I can get double my money back.
Yeah, hopefully, bro. Hopefully that'd be awesome.
The most I ever spent for a ticket was $400. Got first row tickets for WrestleMania 15.
Oh, that was one of my WrestleManias, wasn't it?
Yes.
Wow. Bro, I swear to God, when I was, you know, working and stuff, like, I had no idea what ticket prices were. I mean, I had absolutely no idea what ticket prices were.
Actually, if you look back at it, $400 for first row nowadays, it's probably like $4,000 or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so it's actually not that bad.
Yeah.
And absolutely. It was the hottest period, you know, pretty much almost ever besides the Hogan stuff. But yeah, it was pretty much the hottest ever. $400, not bad.
That's not bad. Not bad, bro.
And guess who fell in our laps?
Who's
Stone
that?
Cold and The Rock in the main event. So that made it even extra special.
Oh, I'm going to have to go back and watch that, bro. So I could see a young John Paz, bro.
Yes.
I got to watch that. That's awesome, man.
Yes. My buddy had his Austin shirt on. I liked Austin and The Rock, but I had my Rock shirt on. So
yeah,
you'll see. I think I even had a Hawaiian shirt on as well.
Oh, I got
one
check,
of those Rock
shirts. Check that out. Shirts. I got to check that out. That's awesome.
But that was like the coolest thing. Like Boys to Men are by us. And we're like, wow, this is pretty cool. And then the security is moving people out of the way. And all of a sudden, Austin The Rock fall on us. So very cool. Cool
yeah,
stuff. So
that, well that is very money. Cool. That is very cool. Because if I was in the first row and any of today's wrestlers fell on me, I would tell them to get the F off of me, bro.
If it was somebody from AEW, oddly would be bigger than all of them as well.
So. Oh, no, without a shadow of a doubt.
Now, as far as today and today's topic, I wanted to talk about a very special Raw. Of course, you were the head writer for January 4th, 1999 edition. Everyone knows it as the Mick Foley wins the world title Raw, and almost the Raw that you could say put the nail in the coffin for WCW Nitro as well, you could almost say. So interesting Raw. Also to note, it was taped December 29th, 1998. And it aired a week later, so it's recorded. Right. So obviously WCW knows the outcome of the show. Does that matter at all, you think, that recorded shows versus live?
I think back then it did. I don't think today at all, bro. Like I'm reading about Impact Wrestling going live. Like what for? They don't even get it, bro. Live meant something when you were going head to head. That's when it meant something. When the Monday Night Wars were going on, bro, you had to be live because of situations like this. Now, bro, if any of these shows are live or taped, it's not going to matter one iota. That it just mattered back then because of the, just the environment, bro. And you had, you know, two super heavyweights going back and forth. And you needed every single advantage, and being live was a huge advantage. Today, it doesn't matter one iota.
Nitro always live. Raw did tape. So, you know, obviously, this would be one of the cases. They taped two shows in one night, yeah. Which is okay. But with Bischoff out there, right? Eric Bischoff would give spoilers and stuff out to the shows. So sometimes that will work against you, and we'll find out later. Obviously, this isn't one of those instances. Him giving out spoilers actually worked against WCW at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, I mean, I'm sure Eric has spoken about it for a million times. And I would think that looking back on it today, I would think that he would be the first one to say it was probably a mistake to do what he did. Bro, very, very, very memorable night.
When you look at that, right, and he says that, and you're thinking to yourself, like, oh, this guy's giving out spoilers to the show, it's got to be not underhanded business, right? But are you guys thinking like, oh, come on, you can't do stuff like that?
No, not at all.
Because he would do that all the time. Give out
bro, support. Not at all. Not at all.
Oh, no?
It was such a ferocious war that everybody was going to pull out everything they possibly could. So not at all, bro. It was expected. Nobody was surprised. But obviously that time it didn't work in his favor.
So we're at the Worcester Centrum in Worcester, Massachusetts. I always get that messed up, but I nailed it this time. Worcester.
Yeah,
but,
and that was
I always
an
want to say Worcester, but yeah,
yeah epic, epic battleground for WWWF. You know, going way, 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 way back. That was always a big, big city for them.
When you look at this, you had almost 11,000 people, so 10,668 people in attendance. Good crowd here. The final rating for the show, just to mention this off the top, 5.7 for Raw. Whew, man, that's insane. Nitro did a 5.
And also keep in mind, bro, people don't understand, like, you know, today with how many viewers versus rating, that rating number is a lot higher than how many viewers, because the rating is with all the televisions that were turned on that night, what percentage was watching the show? So, you know, people think that like 5.1 would be 5,100,000. No, bro, it's higher than that, because back then, bro, it was the rating. Today, it's the viewership. Those are two different things, bro. So back then, every television that was turned on Monday night, 5.1% of those people were watching Raw. So the audience would have been much higher than 5.1 million. A lot of people don't understand that, bro. They think it's the same thing, and it's not.
True. Very true. And with Raw doing 5.7 and Nitro doing 5, it means a huge chunk of people who are watching wrestling, period.
Bro, huge. Think about that, bro. How today it's such a niche market. 10% of the viewing audience was watching wrestling back then. Think about that. That's a huge number, bro.
And to the point where NFL is begging, hey, can you guys go off on a different night? We'll pay you, you know, to get off Monday night. You're killing Monday Night Football. Not even close to the case today. Now Monday Night Football is taking a huge chunk of the audience, and Raw is like very, very niche.
Yeah, bro, it's funny that you say that, John, because, bro, you know, bro, WWE now, they've gotten to a habit of, you know, the show airs, Raw airs for me here from 6 to 9. So, bro, you know, 8:30, they're going into the main event, and it's a half-hour wrestling match. What sucks, bro, is at 8:30 during, you know, I'm immediately turning over to the game, and I'm coming back at like 8:55. It sucks when the season's over because you can't do that now. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I'm literally channel surfing until I get to the end of Raw, because I'm not gonna sit there and watch a freaking 30 minute wrestling match, bro.
Back then I could care less like about football. I'll watch the highlights afterwards. Now watch the game, you tape Raw, then you know you kind of fast forward to what you don't like, but especially if the Giants are on or something, I mean, or if it's a good game, watch it Monday Night Football.
Absolutely.
Back then,
absolutely.
No way.
Yep.
Plus, maybe you flick back and forth between Raw and Nitro. You're not flicking three channels. You're not going, oh, let me check Monday Night Football. It's
right.
Back and forth.
Yeah.
So here, obviously, like we're talking about, it's a huge show just as far as being so memorable and so historical because of Foley winning the title, but because of Tony Schiavone's line, which is obviously fed by Bischoff, that, oh, by the way, Mick Foley, who used to wrestle here as Cactus Jack, wins their world title tonight in the main event. Yeah, that'll put some butts in the seats. So you're thinking like, okay, obviously Schiavone felt bad about it years later because I know he's buddies with Mick, but Bischoff fed him the line to say it like, yeah, that'll put butts in the seats very sarcastically. But depending on where you read it, either 600,000 or 800,000, somewhere between that radius, flipped the channel.
Wow. I never knew that.
So that's the whole viewership for Dynamite, basically.
Yeah. Wow.
It's flipping the channel over. So when Schiavone said that, people are almost going, oh my God, he wins. And 800,000 people just about flipped the channel. And thus giving that you guys a big win. I mean, just because he said that, had he not, obviously the ratings would have been a little bit closer.
Yeah. Wow. I had no idea of those numbers, bro. I had no idea.
It's a lot.
Yeah. That's a heck of a lot, bro. A lot. Yep.
Shows you that Foley may be a bigger draw and ratings draw than people kind of give him credit for.
I always give, you know, bro, you know what it is, man? I swear to God, what has to do with somebody drawing or not. I was talking about this last night on a show I was doing, you know, like about John Cena. Bro, Mick Foley is just one of those guys that's a likable guy. More people really like Mick Foley because of like who he is, and that personality kind of comes through on TV. He's a likable guy. That's the problem I have. And bro, I'm about to freaking debate Cody Rhodes lover Dave LaGreca in a freaking minute here. That's the problem I have with Cody Rhodes, bro. Cody Rhodes does not come across as a likable guy. He comes across, bro, Cody Rhodes is a heel. He's a freaking heel, bro. If he were a heel character, I would probably even like him. But to be a babyface and wear expensive suits and pocket watches and cut promos where he's talking over everybody's head, he's not a likable guy. You know, guys like Cena, likable guy. Guys like Mick, likable guy. When you're a likable guy, bro, the masses are going to be a fan of yours. And Mick was a very, very likable guy.
Thing with Cody, too, and I'm interested in him finishing the story. I like him, and I like just him as a wrestler. Everything about him I like. But like, which I guess people can make the point, well, why are you selling your WrestleMania ticket? Well, The Rock is a huge star. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see The Rock. Right. Not, and I love Roman, but not necessarily want to see Cody finish story. I'd rather make money than that. If The Rock was wrestling, I'd rather see The Rock wrestle. So it kind of just shows you we're, I don't know, me and maybe more of the casual fans are on the Cody. He's not as big as a star as those other guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely not. Because like I say, man, I don't talk for the hardcore fans and the niche audience and I don't talk for them, bro. That's a whole different animal. I am talking about the casual audience. And this is why, you know, the SmackDown numbers obviously have gone up because of the Raw, because of The Rock. And then even Raw has ticked up a little because they're thinking Rock's going to be on Raw. Once we pull Rock out of that equation, maybe after WrestleMania, whatever their plans are, we're going to be right back where we were.
Seems like it for sure. That's just the nature of it, but definitely without Rock, I mean, you're going to lose some casual fans watching.
Yeah.
I think it was about Cena. Just a little side note here. Everyone's saying, like, or a lot of people say, oh, he's the GOAT and how popular he was when he's on top. Right. And I know it's not all his fault. It's Vince. When he's on top and they give him the big push, more wrestling fans left the business than ever in the history before. So it's not like he's this huge draw. Yeah, bro, he's actually kind of like the anti-draw.
We talked about this last night, man. I do a show on Sports Kita. EC3 is on there. We talked about this yesterday. Bro, the way I look at that is this. First of all, prior to John Cena, you had The Rock in Austin.
Yeah.
Cena ain't no Rock in Austin.
No, not even
so,
close.
So, yeah, right off the bat, bro, you can't compare him to Rock in Austin. Secondly, John, not for anything, Ed Ferrara and I had left. So, you know, the writing wasn't what it was when you had Rock in Austin. And I will also say to that, bro, who was his supporting cast? You know, when you had Rock in Austin, you had Mick, you had The Undertaker, you had DX, you had Kane. So when I look at that Cena run and the ratings, you know, dropping, I look at all those factors, bro, because I do look at John Cena as a bona fide star, bro.
Definitely a star. And he sold a ton of merch, but like everything kind of fell off. The attendance went down.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to mention, they want to call him the GOAT and everything else. I'm like, that is so strange, because if you compare him, like GOAT guys, Hogan, Austin, Rock, he's not even close. It's like he's not even in the same stratosphere as those guys.
But I'm telling you too, bro, listen, not to pat myself on the back or not to give myself any credit, but bro, when you look at the time where the ratings were and then when Ed Ferrara and I left, bro, it was not the same. They were not, you know, storytelling the way we did. They were not developing characters the way we did. And I'll never forget, man, my last conversation with Vince, when I told him I was going to work for WCW, I told him, bro, you got a year to ride this wave. Everything is set up. It's all set up, bro. You've got a year to ride the wave. And, bro, when you look at the numbers of when we left, that's kind of exactly what happened. They continue to ride the wave of everything we wrote. But if you look at a year later, that's when everything just started falling off. And again, bro, like I'll sit here and I'll tell you right now, if we were writing for Cena, that would not have happened.
Yeah, he was so corny, but obviously that's the direction they were going. So you can't really blame him 100%. Like, that's Vince. I want to do PG. I want to get this sponsor. I'll sacrifice this to get on this end. Yeah. So,
yeah.
So as far as this Raw, like I mentioned, the fans flipping over, Bischoff obviously feeding Schiavone that line. Another thing is JR is not on the call. He's still out sick with the Bell's palsy and stuff. So it's Cole and Lawler, which may take away from a little bit of the call, because Cole is kind of green at this point. You could really tell how green he is at this point.
Yeah.
So
that's a shame too, man. What a,
I know, great, because imagine even Foley had said, like, imagine if JR called it. I mean, it would have been epic.
That's a shame. That really is. Yeah.
Cole did okay. And it's funny. Foley's trying to be nice about it. Oh, well, he did good. Meaning like, you're no JR, you know?
Right.
Not saying it.
Yeah.
So, before, like, this Raw going into it, we talked about this weeks ago with Rock Bottom. Austin beats Undertaker to earn the shot into the Royal Rumble, which obviously pisses off Vince, and Shane is pissed. and Undertaker's kind of a little bit hidden. Obviously, he's not far off, and he'll return with the more demonic gimmick, and he's going to have the acolytes with him and everything else, and then he's going to create the Ministry of Darkness. But obviously, Vince is pissed at him because he lost, and he's pissed that Austin's now in the Rumble. So what they do is, remember they do the little, whatever that Tumblr gimmick where you pick the numbers?
Yeah.
So Shane goes, just to be fair to Austin, I'm going to pick the number twice. He picks a number, it's number one. Okay, I'll just to be fair, I'm going to do it again. Goes and does it again, he's number one again.
Yeah, it's great. That's great.
So great heel stuff from Shane and Vince. Yeah. And Shane was awesome at this point because he's such like an annoying
so
heel good. Ball buster. Yeah,
just in the blood, bro. It's in the McMahon blood. I mean, I never take that away from them, bro. It was in the genes, man. They were all great performers. They were.
Vince also basically says he wants to be in the Rumble because he wants to be the one to teach Steve Austin a lesson. And
right.
Shane's like, well, since it's such a big moment, I want to train you. Remember they would do those awesome videos?
Oh, we chased the chicken snow, freezing temperatures. I was there, bro. I produced all that stuff. I'll never forget that stuff, bro.
So what's in your head like when you're producing? What do you tell, like, what do you want out of it? You want like a Rocky Balboa thing, like that kind of
1,000%. Yeah, 1,000%. And you know, like Shane to build him up, and Vince like really starting to really believing that he can win. I mean, that was the whole idea. Yeah.
So at this point too, Shane has become a great character, but Vince is like basically going to be, I know he did technically wrestle before, but like now he's really going to be a wrestler. Is this something you guys talk about in the back, or is this like a joke, or is like he's dead serious about wrestling? Because Dr. Tom said like he was training him like as if it was anybody.
He wasn't serious about being a wrestler, but bro, if he is going to be in this role, he is going to be the absolute best he can be at it, bro. No question about it. So yeah, man, what Dr. Tom says, you know, like 1,000%. Vince has, you know, no ambition to be a wrestler on the roster, but if he's going to do this, bro, he's not going to make himself look bad at all.
Also teasing the fact that Vince loves Shane so much. You know, at this point, there was such great relationship that when Mankind wrestles Shane a few weeks earlier on Raw, Vince is so mad because Shawn Michaels is the commissioner. I know we talked about this before. You're kind of teasing that Michaels is really a babyface, even though he's the commissioner, saying he's helping the McMahons. He kind of put Shane in that predicament to get beat up by Foley. So Vince is furious at him and basically says, I'm going to fire you as commissioner. And then Michaels gives him sweet chin music on an earlier Raw. So, I mean, teasing stuff with Michaels basically turning babyface, but Shane and Vince being so tight that whenever something happens with Shane, Vince is furious.
Exactly. Right. Yep.
So Hawk at this point too, around this time, admits that Draws was the drug pusher. Whose idea was this and why?
Wow, bro. I don't even remember. I don't even remember that. I'm sure it was mine and Ed's. Is it around now at this point?
Oh, 99. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm sure. Yeah. No doubt it was ours because Vince wasn't coming up with any of that stuff. Yeah. I mean, bro, I guess it's just trying to find somewhere to go with the story, bro. Like again, man, so many times in wrestling today, I will see something start and then the next week it's gone. And I hate that, bro. I don't believe in that. I'd rather come up with some kind of an angle, some kind of an answer, some kind of a solution to kind of, you know, tie up that bow than to just forget about it. I'm not that kind of a guy, bro. Because it happens all the time now in wrestling. So could it have been? I really don't remember it, John. Could it have been a bad idea? Absolutely, yes. It could have been a bad idea. But like I said, I'm kind of looking for a way to take this story in another direction, end this story, whatever, rather than just let it leave hanging, and then people are going to wonder what happened.
Like with the Titantron thing, remember Hawk falls off. It's kind of Draz's fault. Draz is trying to be an LOD member. So it is interesting. It's almost kind of ending it too, the storyline, but it is interesting because Draz was trying to be the next member of LOD. No wonder he was the drug pusher.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can definitely buy that. I mean, I can definitely, you know, understand that.
Were you trying to be more like rated R TV programming rather than just wrestling? Like, hey, I'm going to do an actual storyline of like drug pushers and stuff like that.
Not really, bro, John. That wasn't the mindset. The mindset was, and which should be the mindset today, bro. What other television shows are we competing with at that time of night? That's the mindset. Not that, well, we need to do more violence, we need to do more sex. We never looked at it that way. We looked at it as, bro, this is a show from 9 to 11 o'clock at night. This is an adult. This is not a kid show. So what are the other shows on the other channels that we are competing with, and what kind of content do they have? What kind of material? That's what we were looking at. Bro, we never wrote anything to shock people. Never. I mean, never did we write anything that way. But we definitely wanted to be an adult show.
Also, George the Animal Steel becomes one of the members of the Oddities. Do you remember this or why he got added to the group?
He probably needed money.
Just like that? That's it? And you
probably. Yep, probably. That was probably, he probably went to Vince. He was probably in a bad financial situation. So Vince probably told us, you know, listen, we need to find a spot for this guy. And that's what we did. Even though, bro, listen, I will say this, George the Animal Steel never got old. Never. I don't care what era you put that guy in. Never, ever, ever got old.
Legend, absolute legend.
Yeah.
Was he working backstage at this point or no? I know he had been an agent.
He had been an agent, bro. I don't think so. I don't, but I'm not 100% sure, John.
Vince is interesting. Sometimes he'll bring back, you know, like Mae Young and Moolah and stuff. You know
what it is with Vince, bro? It was always, if there was a tie-in with his dad, you were on that list where he'll give you a job, he'll give you money, he'll take care of you. Jim Mize had a tie-in with his dad. I mean, George the Animal Steel was under Vince Sr. Yeah. So when it was one of those guys, bro, Vince would never, ever, ever say no.
So also to know, Pretty Mean Sisters are out there saying, you know, they're going to take out any men. They're, you know, they hate men. And the Acolytes actually kidnapped Dennis Knight in a parking lot. Just this is kind of the little bit of the buildup. And of course, on WCW, you had the infamous finger poke of doom, which also kind of led to their downfall as well. Just a bad storyline. So it was like, you guys fully win the title. Everyone loves it. They're going down. They're a sinking ship. They tried to do basically a redo of the NWO.
And this, NWO was, Elite. This was January, right?
January 4th, 1999.
Bro, would you believe I did not go there till October? People still people believe I did the finger poke of doom.
Oh my god! That's, yeah, yeah. Nash is booking it at that
yeah,
point.
Yeah, yeah. They believe that I did that when I was at WCW. Meanwhile, I didn't go there till 10 months after.
Right. Wow. Weird.
Yeah.
They're way off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't believe that on the internet. I can't believe they're off. Huh?
Yeah.
they're usually 100% accurate.
Yeah, oh yeah. So, absolutely.
So basically this Raw starts as a little bit of recap video with Michaels technically getting fired. And basically they're going to show a little retrospective of his career because his career is over, but Vince immediately comes out, says, cut that off. And, you know, and all the corporation comes out, like, turn that Shawn Michaels crap off. He's gone. He's out of here. I fired him. But Michaels ends up coming out on stage saying he had an ironclad contract. You can't fire me. I'm still the commissioner. So very much of an interesting thing, just as far as Vince and Michaels, just teasing that, hey, maybe Vince doesn't have ultimate power. He was dumb enough to give this guy an ironclad contract. Writing-wise, is that just a good way to kind of bust Vince's balls? Because he's got a great reaction to it.
Yeah, bro, conflict, man. Constant conflict. Bro, today, John, you have matches for the sake of having matches. There's no conflict, bro. The people love conflict. They love controversy. They love fighting. They love arguments. They love, that's why, you know, at that time, that's why Jerry Springer was so over. People love conflict, bro. And any way you can create conflict, people are going to be interested in it.
Plus, Michaels throws out the little nugget like, hey, remember you said you wanted to be in the Rumble as your dream? Well, now, since I'm the commissioner, you're number two in the Rumble, which obviously Vince didn't want, and obviously it pisses him off. So that was a great thing, too, because you need Vince in at number two if Austin's in number one. I mean, Austin McMahon's going to drive the show.
That's the whole thing, bro. Like, a lot of people bury me and bury my writing and all that, and quite frankly, I don't give a shit because – those that do either didn't watch the show or didn't understand the show. Because, bro, there was such a thought process put in the writing. For that example, like what you just laid out there. Perfect example. Bro, you don't see any of that today. Ever. Ever. There's no, Vince's favorite word used to be nuances. There's no nuances whatsoever, bro. Wrestler A is wrestling wrestler B, and that's the way the entire show is from beginning to end. And that's the thing, bro. Like, people, I don't think they really understand the thought that was put into every one of these shows, man.
And even he comes out with DX too, you know, kind of giving backup because Vince has a corporation just in case. So he even has DX with him as backup, Michaels. So even that kind of makes sense, which is a little bit of foreshadowing, a little teasing of what's going on. But you mean you guys had this laid out for weeks because Michaels kind of at rock bottom is kind of being babyface-ish. And then a week later, he puts Shane in a match with Mankind, which pisses them off. Like it was all kind of like leading, which is great because then Michaels can kind of help Austin out a little bit as a babyface. He can kind of screw Vince over. So you're right. It was good conflict as far as even Michaels being the commissioner.
And bro, like I've always told you, John, we wrote from pay-per-view to pay-per-view. So that really allows you to focus in on those 4 weeks. I mean, that's what we're doing right now. That's what's in front of us. These 4 weeks. So it really gave you the opportunity to just really focus on the next 4 shows. And then you got the pay-per-view. And then we focus on the next 4 shows.
So the first match, Steve Blackman defeats Ken Shamrock, 3 minutes, 30 seconds. Basically, Billy Gunn, Dan Severn interferes too, but Billy Gunn, who's kind of feuding with Shamrock at this point, gives him the Famaster behind the referee's back, which enables Blackman to cover Shamrock. And then even when they go to the back, Billy Gunn and Shamrock are brawling in the back. You guys had this thing where you would, and I know it's kind of Crash TV, short matches. Do you like it's only 3 minutes, 30 seconds, Shamrock loses? Does it even matter that it's that short? Because, I mean, it's just TV matches.
Yeah, no, bro. I'm a firm believer, bro, of to the casual wrestling fan, when a wrestling match starts, you know, I am of the mindset that once a wrestling, you know, and again, bro, I'm talking casual audience. I'm not talking wrestling fans. I'm not talking Dave Meltzer. I'm talking the casual audience. I firmly believe, bro, in my technique always was once a match starts, the mindset of the casual fan is this. Okay, what's the finish and what's next? Immediately, bro. Immediately. They're not wrestling fans, bro. They're there to see a television show. They're there to see everything in between. So that's why, you know, a lot of these matches, you know, 5-6 minutes, because that's the mindset for bro. It's my mindset today. I swear to God, you know, John, most of my viewing is freaking YouTube, and I'm looking at the length. And the length of the video is determining whether or not I'm watching the video, bro. And I think that's the mind of a casual fan. When a wrestling match starts, okay, what's the finish and what's next? You don't want to lose their attention.
For sure, especially with WWE there, I can just flick the channel and you might lose them.
Yep.
Yep. Also to note, Blackman was obsessed with Blue Blazer being Owen Hart at this point. Of course, Jarrett, Owen Hart pretending that he's not the Blue Blazer, right, even though he was unmasked and you kind of saw he was Owen Hart, but it could have been doctored footage, as Owen would say. You know, you right, never know.
Right. That was a lot of fun, man.
Foley comes out. He basically says he wants a shot at WWF title against The Rock at the Royal Rumble pay-per-view, which is coming up a few weeks later, but he wants that shot. Vince comes out. He says he can't even believe that Mick would do this. He would stain the title. He's not world title material. You know, all this great heel stuff, but he said, hey, if you want to be in the Royal Rumble, I'll give you a chance. Since I don't want you staining the world title, if you beat Triple H later, I'll let you in the Rumble, but Shane was going to be the referee of the match.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Vince is kind of even like pumping up a little bit.
And bro, it were those things that made Mick a likable guy. You know, you knew that Vince was always, you know, there was a part of Mick that, you know, looked up to Vince and loved Vince and wanted to trust Vince. But, you know, Vince was always there to screw him, belittle him, talk down to him. And these were the things that made you like Mick Foley.
Plus, I love that he's being a total heel, a total asshole, saying, like, oh, you would stay in the title. He technically should have won the title at Rock Bottom if Vince didn't screw. So he's thinking, like, I should have been champion. What do you mean I'd stay in the title? I should be champ right now. You screwed me. So it's a nice little buildup for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
China is in the back talking to, basically, I think you'll remember this. He was the man with the wig on and the dress pretending to be a woman. And obviously he's teasing something with Mark Henry here.
Oh,
obviously,
yeah.
With that whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So obviously he doesn't know that it's a man, but China is going to try to maybe seek a little bit revenge on Mark Henry as their sexual chocolate is kind of being too much of a player and they're not having a great relationship. Although China is pretending they do have a great relationship, but going to use this guy with the wig and maybe trick Mark Henry eventually. But they are talking the back, kind of you're building something up. You're like, wait, what's going on here? Who's China talking about? Who is she talking to? Who's this friend of hers?
That's what I'm talking about, bro. Like I said, man, I'd rather have a story that sucks than no story at all. I'm sorry, bro. I'd rather have some kind of a story with some kind of characters than to just put a match in the ring for 20 to 30 minutes. I'm sorry, bro. That's me.
Basically, Mark Henry is going to say, oh, China, I'm sorry. I made some mistakes. Let's get back together. And she's like kind of giving him a lot of like forgiveness. But obviously, she's got something in the back corner because she's talking to this person with the wig on. Obviously, something's going on. She's up to something. Yeah. So then we have Mark Henry versus Goldust. Mark Henry wins via DQ 3 minutes, 45 seconds after Goldust hits him with the Shattered Dreams, which is, of course, putting his legs up on the rope and kicking him right in the balls right in front of the ref. So that got him to DQ. Also to note, the PMS, Jackie and Terry were out there as well, kind of, I don't know, around ringside, if you will. So kind of a lot going on. You had the China stuff because China was out there as well, trying to make up with Mark. Goldust kicks him in the balls. I mean, you just had a lot going on here. Do you think that China, Mark Henry, sexual chocolate, was that getting over? Because it did seem like he got a pretty good crowd reaction.
Man, I think people were, I think people were interested in that. Yeah, man, I think that was working. Yeah.
So as far as China is concerned, obviously she's got something going on. So then they cut to the back and Dennis Knight is kind of like in a dungeon. He's being chained to something. It's very dark. It's kind of mysterious. Something is up. So you're teasing something, and Lawler and Cole are like, what the hell? Where is he? What's going on? So just keep that in mind for a nice little tease. Then we have the Godfather versus Test. A 2-minute match goes to a double DQ. Not really much to mention here about this one. But what do you think about Godfather and Test only getting 2 minutes?
Well, you know, bro, see that's the thing, bro, because we were head to head, bro. I'm telling you, man, we wrote these shows like the viewer is sitting there with a remote control begging you to change the channel. And bro, Godfather versus Test is not a, you know, it's not a marquee match. But, you know, we need to, you know, fill 2 hours of this show. So, you know, the longer that match goes, the more of a chance for people to change the channel. I mean, we were constantly aware of that, bro.
And at this point, Test is basically the new hired gun of the corporation, too. So that's kind of just a little wrinkle to throw in there. But it was weird. It was just. It just felt like there's really nothing much going on in this segment.
Yeah.
Like, no, I know, also, not everything can be gold.
Also, I would think if Tess was the new hired gun, you don't want to leave them in a long freaking wrestling match, bro. You know, I mean, you want it to be short and sweet because you want to highlight Test and, you know, basically see that Test is a badass. You know, today, that would have been a 20-minute match, bro. And, and you would have killed Test's character. You would have gone 50-50, and then you would have been asking yourself, why the hell did the corporation hire this guy? He can't get the job done.
Next up, Triple H versus Mankind for a shot, or excuse me, for a spot in the Royal Rumble. Triple H with China ends up getting the win in about 3 minutes. Shane McMahon is the ref. Obviously, Shane cheats because they hate Foley, and they established it earlier on that you're a stain and everything else. So not only does he not want to give him a title shot, he doesn't even want to give him a spot in the Royal Rumble. So Triple H, who's technically, it's a babyface at this point, says, I'm sorry to Mankind after the match because Shane obviously helped Triple H win. He goes, I'm really sorry that I had to do it, but it's business. I want a shot in the Rumble, and I want a shot at the world title eventually if I win the Rumble. So I'm sorry. And then he says, you know what, to make it up for you, boom, nails Shane, gives him a pedigree, beats him up, which leaves Mankind and Shane alone, and Shane's kind of beaten up. So Triple H kind of, a little bit of a tease, because eventually he'll turn heel at WrestleMania 15 a few months later, but a little bit of a tease of like, he'll do whatever he can to win, but hey, I'm still a babyface, so I'm going to beat up Shane and help Mick.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said, bro, this is all just, you know, very, very interesting stuff where you don't know where this stuff is going. That's the whole thing, bro. You don't know what it's... I mean, I watched these shows today. I know what's next. I know what's next. I know what's next. The whole idea is you didn't know where this show was going, so you had to watch. That was the whole idea, man.
Because if you didn't, you'd be lost. Because right. I mean, you guys are really right. With Foley, he's the thread throughout the whole show. Obviously, Vince is too. But Foley puts Shane in submission, and he gets the mic, and he says, Vince, get out here now. I'm tired of being screwed over. I'm going to destroy, you know, break his arm, or whatever. I'm gonna really hurt Shane if you don't give me a WWF title shot. And Vince comes up, fine. If you let him go, I'll give you the title shot. And then he said, oh, by the way, I want it to be tonight, and it's no DQ. Vince agrees as long as he lets go. And he's like, that's my son. God damn it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So he was pissed, but it's funny. They keep building up that Shane is like the weak point of Vince, because if anybody messes with Shane, Vince is kind of give in.
Yeah. No, it's kind of showing that side of Vince that he really does actually care about a human being, and it's his son. So that's how you get layers of characters, bro. Just like when Austin saves Stephanie, that's how characters now, you know, they're three-dimensional, bro, because now they're human beings. And as much of an a-hole that Vince is, we see that he does care about his son.
Next up, we have Edge versus D'Lo Brown. It's going to go to a no contest in 5 minutes. Before I mentioned PMS, they're going to try to ruin matches and ruin men. So they try to here, but Terry Runnels gets knocked down, and they bring her to the back. So that's why it's no contest in 5 minutes. It was actually a pretty good match up until that point. But basically, they have a storyline, or you guys had the storyline. She might have been pregnant, and she might have just had a miscarriage because she got knocked over. Do you like this angle? Is it a little too controversial, or what do you think?
Bro, I think she had a problem with it. But again, bro, I am looking at, bro, what is on the other channels at 10 o'clock at night? This is the kind of stuff that's on the other shows at 10 o'clock at night. Like I said, man, this was an adult show. And I'm looking for a story for like every freaking character. So did I have a problem with this? Absolutely not.
Next up, Kane versus Briscoe and Patterson, the Stooges. Why? Since they're on the corporation, because, and Kane, it's funny because you're kind of making him a little bit of a babyface, but he's controlled by Vince. Vince is like, I'll put you back in the insane asylum if you don't listen to me. And he blames Patterson and Briscoe for Shane getting beat up all the time. He's like, you guys are supposed to watch Shane's back. What is your problem? So Kane basically goes to a no contest. I guess you could say Kane kind of wins because Vince basically gives him the win just because he was going to just destroy Shane too. Like, he was kind of out of control. He beats the crap out of Briscoe and Patterson. Then he almost beats up Shane, and Vince is like, are you crazy? We were supposed to protect him. The reason why you're beating those two up is because of Shane. So yeah. It kind of almost teasing that Kane is a babyface and knows that they're screwing him over, and he almost beats up Shane, and Vince kind of talks him out of it. I'll put you back in the insane asylum. Better let Shane go.
Right.
So they kind of just give Kane the win, but definitely teasing that he has ulterior motives. Like, he basically hates the corporation, but is only listening to them because they got him out of the insane asylum.
Yeah, and now that's the thing, bro. Again, that's the hook. Kane can snap at any second, bro. What week is Kane gonna turn? I mean, that's the hook, bro.
Enough is enough kind of thing.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Shane, of course, admonishes the Stooges. He's not happy with them. He says, I'm going to send you guys back to the Briscoe Brothers Auto Shop. And, of course, then the Stooges are arguing with each other. They go to the back, and we go back, and we see Dennis Knight in this dungeon thing. He's still tied up. The Acolytes, Farouk and Bradshaw, untie him. They unchain him, and they kind of lead him out of the room. So it's like, wait, what the hell? The Acolytes? What's going on here? So almost building the little stable heel, building the Ministry of Darkness, but we don't know what the hell's going on, right?
Yeah, and you got to stay tuned to find out.
Very interesting with just that stuff, because you're just confused, but you're also intrigued.
Yeah, no, bro, that's the key. I mean, that is how you keep an audience, you know, tied in, you know, emotionally, bro. They care enough to want to know what happened. Again, bro, I'm going to give you a perfect example. Did you watch Raw this past Monday night?
Yes.
So there's a gauntlet match, bro, the last 40 minutes to determine who's going to face Gunther. Okay, bro, because I'm not emotionally invested in any of these wrestlers, I don't care who wins. It doesn't matter to me. There's no emotional investment. Therefore, I am not interested in watching the match. So, you know, you with these stories, bro, you're getting people emotionally invested, bro. That just, it doesn't happen today, man.
Got to be honest, the only guy I cared about in that match was Gable, because they had that video and they were kind of saying that, you know, he lost in front of his family the last time he faced Gunther. So he was the only guy I was invested in. I was like, wow, if he doesn't win, and then he didn't win, I was like, wow, that was weird. Why would they kind of make me invested in him for him to lose? I thought that was strange.
I think they're gonna make that a three-way, I think.
Possible, yeah. And it's funny, Zayn was supposed to be this big baby face. It felt like the crowd kind of wanted Gable to win because of that video, and he, you know, making it more invested in him.
Well,
I don't know if they were invested anymore.
Bro, that's the thing with the WWE that I can't freaking stand, where, you know, Sami Zayn runs the gauntlet, and then here comes a fresh Chad Gable, looks like a million bucks, shoot wrestler, totally legit, and he can't beat Sami Zayn, who went through five guys. That's what I hate about the WWE, bro. Sami Zayn is somebody's boy, and, you know, so they're going to put Sami over, but totally 100% unbelievable.
The next thing up here, the Road Dogg defeated Al Snow in 8 minutes and 30 seconds to retain his WWF Hardcore Championship. Match never really enters the ring. Road Dogg wins with a pile driver on a pallet, basically in the back. Kind of a long match, but it was fun just because, I mean, they're brawling everywhere. It's almost like it's not a match.
You know, John, with all the research, and people don't want to hear this, bro, the matches that took place outside of the ring, or the fights that took place, if it were outside of the ring, it always drew more than a regular match. And again, bro, that's the casual fans. If the casual fans, bro, are flipping through the channels, there's a big difference with them seeing a fight versus a wrestling match. They'll stop at a fight. And, bro, every time there was a fight on the show, it always outdrew the wrestling matches.
Interesting. So then we go back to the back. The Acolytes then put Midian in a room with a mysterious, like, light in it. And he goes into the room. So it's like almost like he's being sent in for some sort of transformation. And we just hear, you know, maybe some screaming. We don't know what's going on. It's very, very like dark, but the light kind of makes it very like, what the hell? What is this? Like exorcism? What the hell's going on here? And then the acolytes close the door. So obviously they know something nefarious is going on with Midian or Dennis Knight at this point in that back room. So kind of like a good little thing, a good little tease for obviously
everybody had something, bro. That was the whole idea. Everybody had something going. Look at everybody we've talked about on the show, PMS, Mark Henry, China, you know, the acolytes, you know, everybody had something going on, bro.
Another interesting thing is they go to the back. DX kind of leads Michaels out of the building, blah, blah, blah. So you're kind of wondering, like, where Triple H is at this point. Just if you think about what's going on, like, he kind of helps himself get into the Rumble by cheating, but then he beat up Shane. So it's like, he's a face, he's a heel. Like, you got to just kind of wonder, like, if we can trust Triple H at this point. So Michaels leaves the building. He's the commissioner, right? He just kind of set up Vince for the Royal Rumble in a bad thing. Like, he you could tell somebody's after him. So Michaels goes, all right, I'll see you later. And for some reason, Triple H goes, maybe, maybe not. So, okay, it's like, okay, that was weird. Like, that's a nice little tease, right? Then the camera gets knocked over, but Bossman, the corporation, beat the hell out of Michaels, throw his face through a plate glass window, throw him through the car.
I can't remember that. And he's
destroyed. So the corporation gets their revenge on him, seemed like set up by Triple H. It seemed like. We don't know, but that's what it seemed like.
Yeah. Yeah, great stuff, man. Again, man, just keeping people's interest.
Which is because it's like, wow, what the hell's going to happen to Michaels? Well, he must be gone now. Obviously, we'll see him in a few months later to help Austin get his title shot against The Rock at WrestleMania. But that was so interesting because you thought Michaels got the one up on him and Vince is one step ahead again.
Bro, that's the thing, man. And I say this a million times. When I was writing the show, I was in the shoes of every character I was writing for. So if that happened, how would they react? What would Vince do? We were always in the shoes of the character, bro. And that's why stuff like that happened.
Very cool angle just to see him going through the window and he's all bloody and there's, you know, glass everywhere. He's bleeding like crazy. Very cool angle. And then you throw in the thing where it's like, wait, what the hell? Did Triple H just set him up? I thought Triple H was like, and then you realize a few months later, like, he probably did set him up.
Yeah. Bro, the more questions you can ask, the better. The more questions you can ask, the better.
Next up, the no DQ match for the WWF title, Mankind with DX, with him, Billy Gunn, China, Road Dogg, Triple H, and X-Pac will defeat The Rock, who had Kane, Ken Shamrock, Shane McMahon, Test, Big Boss Man, and Vince out there with him. Obviously, this no DQ match went 9 minutes with Foley getting the win. Man, the crowd is, first of all, just crazy nuts. We have, you know, DX interfering. We have the corporation interfering. One guy we haven't seen yet, although Michaels teased it earlier because he said it's going to be a stone cold crazy night, you know? So he's teasing something. Austin comes out, huge pop, probably equal to Foley winning the title. I mean, just huge pop, nails Rock with the chair. He puts Foley on top of the Rock. The referee turns, Austin walks out of the ring, and guess what? 1, 2, 3, Foley is the new champion. Of course, Austin flips Vince, even throws his hat out. He's like, you screwed me. You ruined it.
That's the beautiful thing that we did right there, bro. I always refer to this as setting the table. You know, bro, when you know a wrestler is coming back from an injury, or you know you're debuting a new wrestler, you want to set the table, bro. So when they come out, they're gonna get the biggest pop possible. Look what we did here, bro. We made people forget about Steve Austin. All this stuff going on with Mick Foley the whole entire night. Now we've forgotten about Austin because now Mick's got our attention and this main event's got our attention. Austin's an afterthought at this point. Then when you hit his music at the very end, it explodes. That's how you set up talent, bro. That's how you get talent over. So we purposely held Austin back, wanted people to forget about Austin for that moment.
Cole, I feel like, kind of overdoes it. You could tell he's green here saying, like, he, for all the people that said he couldn't do it, or people, you know, like the underdog, yeah, he did it. He just, you could tell, wasn't good at this point. It was a little green. Still, not a terrible call, but just wasn't what JR, I mean, no, JR would have made this over the top great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course, Mick says, Big Daddy O did it. He did it for his kids. And Vince says, this makes me want to puke. Anybody but him, not him. This guy's a stain. Austin is, you're a dead man. So just really kind of funny stuff, but man, the crowd goes nuts. And then he remember does the infamous victory lap around with the belt. The crowd is crazy. They didn't think he was going to win the title at all.
I'm looking forward to seeing that, bro. Cause you know, I review the Attitude Era on russosbrand.com every 2 weeks. I'm looking forward now to getting back to that. I have not seen that in ages.
Very, very good. And obviously the crowd is like insane. Like, you want to talk about loud pops. It is crazy loud. It's just insane. Wow. One of the loudest pops with between Austin helping and Foley winning. The crowd absolutely loved it. And it just showed you he was world championship material with the way the crowd reacted. He is a huge star.
Absolutely. Without a shadow of a doubt.
Vince obviously is going to be very, very pissed. And he's now he's in the Rumble number two with Austin at one. So it's like everything he thought he got the one up because he took out Michaels, but everything seems to be working against him at this point.
Yeah. Bro, like I said, man, that's why say whatever you want about me. Like, honestly, bro, I'm at a point in my life. I could give a shit about wrestling. I could give a shit what people think about my career. I could give a shit about any of that. But the bottom line is, John, as we walk through these shows, you are seeing the thought that is put into every single thing. Whether you like it or don't like it, we are not writing this show at 4 o'clock the day of. And shows, just like I said, bro, for the last freaking 25 years, shows have not been written like these shows were written.
Now, obviously, you got to give this a thumbs up just because of what happened in the show and building all the storylines and building even into the Royal Rumble and beyond. But also 5.7 versus 5.0. And this is kind of where you guys really just kind of take it and go away with it. And that's another why you got to give a thumbs up, because of the ratings and would just kind of go away with for WCW.
And not only that, though, John, think about the pressure of keeping that momentum going. You got to keep this going now, because, bro, that's what they do. They've done this for the last 25 years. The night after WrestleMania, bro, you know you're going to have a huge crowd. Everybody's going to tune in to see what happened. And then what do, bro? They deliver a subpar show, and by the time you get to next week, we lost everybody that we gained from WrestleMania. So keeping that momentum going, bro, is not an easy thing to do.
Very, very true. Now let's hit the plugs and wrap this bad boy up. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Vince, what about you?
Yeah, guys, if you've never been a subscriber to my Patreon program, you can go to patreon.com/RussoTWC right now, and you can get a free week of the brand. So you can sample all our shows, bro. We got shows every single day. So grab that free week, patreon.com/RussoTWC.
All right. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you right back here and next time. Have a good one, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother. Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by A Wrestling Historian. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram for your latest dose
of pro wrestling history. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram today. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram today.
WrestleVille.com presents the book Lance by Chance, Wrestling as a Von Erich.
Hear how he was discovered, what happened when he was at world class, and the adventures he had when he left Dallas.
Also available, the Pro Wrestling Vault, Volume 1 and 2.
Read stories of the Northern Wrestling Federation, Jazz, Bobby Eaton, Thunder Rosa, Tracy Smothers, Harley Race, PJ Black, Bushwhacker Luke, The Fantastics, Ricky Morton, Scott Casey, Tim Storm, Kamala, Sal Renaro, Jeremiah Plunkett, Andrew Anderson, and many more.
Get your books today at WrestleVille.com. WrestleVille. It's where wrestling lives.